to start by telling you a story. And you have to bear with me because you might think, what on earth does this have to do with anything? A while ago, a few years ago, I wrote a newspaper article about a bloke called Jack from America. And the story I wrote as a freelance writer, you know, some of you may know, you sort of pitch 100 pieces and get knocked back 99 times before one finally makes it. This one, when I found it and thought I'll write it, I knew it was going to take. And the story starts with a really close friend of Jack's passing away from cancer. And so maybe nothing unusual or, you know, phenomenal about that story. But what made it an interesting story is that 6 months prior to passing away, Jack's friend had been given the all clear. And he'd been given the all clear, and he was told to go home and live your life and all that. And he gradually got worse and worse until he went back, and they did another test, and the doctor said, oh, that first test was wrong. We reckon you've got about 3 months. And they were right. And so when he passed away, clearly Jack and all everyone who knew him was incredibly sad. But more than that, Jack said, I was incredibly angry. How on earth could that happen? How do you get the test wrong? You know, we're in America. So he went into the testing center, which had stuffed it up, and said, what's happening? And the center turned around and said, sorry, you know, we really can't do much about it because the current test for that particular type of cancer is only about, it's just a little more than 50% accurate, which is like flipping a coin. And Jack said to me when I was interviewing him, he says, I don't know what it was, but something snapped inside me. It's something just tweaked. And he decided that from that point on, he was going to make it his life's work to find a better test for pancreatic cancer than the one that stuffed up his friend. Now, that would be a fairly big claim for anyone, let alone someone who had no PhD, no master's, not even been to university. But what he said was, I remembered something from year 8 science. And I went home, and I Googled. And through Google and Wikipedia, he discovered a platform called Google Scholar, which is essentially open source materials and scientific papers and whatnot. He discovered on those papers they have the email addresses of the people who write them, and through that you then can connect with them. And he actually started connecting with different people, academics and people interested in that field, on blog sites and in online forums. And it took him just over 8 months to teach himself how these tests actually work. Then he decided to start about trying to create a new one. It took him another 8 or 9 months to get what he thought was going to be, you know, something that might be useful. And he wanted to go one step further because he thought, let's assume this is useful. I want to make this as simple as possible for people who need it to use it. So he fully costed out all the materials it would take to get it, all the logistic companies, and basically fully costed out what it would take to make this and get it out to the different labs around the States. And when he was happy with that, he sent it off to 5 of the top research labs in America. And after about 4 weeks, he says he had 5 replies. And every one of them, whilst not word for word, but every one of them went like this: Jack, this is amazing. You taught yourself. Who does that? That's phenomenal. No one does that. But if we're being honest about it, you're not going to tell us anything we don't already know about this. So if you want to contribute to this kind of research, the best thing you can do is donate to one of these charities listed below. So obviously, he spent, you know, every spare minute he had on this for the past nearly 2 years, or, you know, a year and a half. And he was obviously disappointed, but he thought, well, what have I got to lose? So he decided to Google everyone he could find who might have an interest and just email everyone he could. In total, he sent another 194 emails. So he'd sent 199, right? And he says to me, you know what, Dan? After a few months, not even 30% of them bothered to reply. Those that did said, Jack, this is phenomenal. You're a freak, mate. Who does this? Who teaches themselves this kind of stuff? It's amazing. But to be honest, you're not going to teach us anything we don't know. So if you want to donate, here's some of the links you can do, you know, you can go to. And he was obviously very disappointed. But he was just flicking through a journal article and he came across the name of someone he hadn't emailed yet. And he saw that they were at John Hopkins Research Labs, which is one of the big top ones in the world, as it happens. He'd already sent them. He'd already sent something to them in the first round of emails he sent, but not this person. So I thought, what the heck? A week goes by, he gets an email back going, Jack, this is phenomenal. You taught yourself. Who does that? You're a freak. We think you're onto something. At this point, Jack's gone, I don't know who this we is, because we didn't think that a while ago, right? But we think you're onto something. Can you leave it with us now? Long story, slightly less long. When he said, leave it with us, we're going to workshop it, we'll get back to you. When he got back to you, he says, it's phenomenal, Jack, right? But when we announce this to the mainstream media, we can't overstate things, because so many people are emotionally invested in cancer, we cannot go over the top here, right? Because you can't be, you know, playing with people like that. So when they announced it, they said this, Jack Andraker is the Thomas Edison of our times. Obviously not wanting to overstate things, right? Not only has Jack taught himself how to do this, the test that stuffed up his family friend, around about 50%, Jack's come up with one which is well over 90% accurate. The test that stuffed up Jack's friend takes, assuming there's no backlog, takes 5 days to take the biopsy, send it away, test it, bring it back. 5 days. Jax tells you in 5 minutes. The test, which you have to wait 5 days to get a 50% accurate score, costs you, in the US, $1,000 per test. Jax's test that he fully costed out, 4 cents. When they change the protein that Jack's test reacts with, they've got an early detection test for ovarian cancer. Why is that important? There is no early detection test for ovarian cancer. So you can tell why, when I was writing this story, I knew the editors were going to take it. But there's one part of this story which is really cool. And the coolest part of this story is that you've all just assumed that's Jack. That's Jack, and he's 15 years old. He's the one on the left. He's 17. This is going by. He's 17 now. He's doing the equivalent of the year 12, but he's a part-time cancer researcher. Getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in grants to work on this stuff. And in my article, Jack said this, you know, because I said he couldn't have done this even 10 years ago. But he spoke about the internet. He doesn't care about your gender, race, or religion. We tend to think it does when you only look at the negatives, you know, the trolling and the picking on people, right? But there's the other side. There's the other side where it's a place where only your ideas count. We can use it to help people around the globe to innovate and change the world. And that's what I want to talk to kids about. Because, you know, there's a bit of we get what we focus on, right? And if we actually speak to kids about how they can use it to change the world, or maybe just change someone's world, how much more powerful might that be? You know, I don't wonder, because I taught in schools for 15 years, I kind of knew what the lessons are taught about social media in school and at home, but I wanted to ask kids. So about 2 months ago, or a month and a half ago, we ran a Generation Next seminar just for kids on the Gold Coast, and we asked them. I said to them, how is social media taught in your school? And this is what they said. 10% of we ran about 200 kids. 10% said, well, it isn't. We just don't talk about social media. But 81% said, we only really get told what not to do to avoid having a negative digital footprint. A handful of them were educated to the power of social media to help us learn. And again, another handful were taught to use how social media to help us learn, connect with us, and develop a positive digital footprint. But if you think about anything you've learnt to do well, It certainly didn't focus on just the whatnots. So, and I'm just going to be absolutely clear at this point. Understanding all the negative sides of social media and all that, absolutely of, you know, really high importance. But I'm also here to suggest that maybe there are other important things and other important considerations for us to talk about in our schools and around our dinner tables. One of the reasons I'm you know, interested in this is just the way in which the economy and society in general is changing. So what we know is youth unemployment's never been higher. We know that jobs, you know, that were around 10, 15 years ago, which might have catered for those kids who didn't necessarily get school, they're not there anymore. But we also know that kids who do really well at school are now struggling to find work. For example, you know, we've done such a good job of telling kids they have to work hard at school. We've got too many law graduates, dentist graduates, teaching graduates, you know, even medical students. There's too many for the actual amount of positions that are there. And the issue with that is a lot of them, I'm not saying they're going to end up unemployed, but they're going to end up in areas that they're not necessarily passionate about or interested in and get that intrinsic rewards from. So, you know, what do we make of the fact that companies around the world are stopping looking at scores from school? What do we make of the fact that firms are hiding universities that people have attended? You know, this is Deloitte, this is Ernst & Young, this isn't crazy high-tech, you know, startups in San Francisco. You know, we're talking about accountants deciding, actually, you know, we're not bothered about your scores and what school you went to. We just want to see who you are and what you can do. What do we make of the fact that a lot of predictions are talking about the freelance economy? You know, more and more of you will have more and more friends who are now self-employed than you would have done maybe, you know, the equivalent 20 years ago. What do we make of that? So I actually put out to kids, you know, let's be clear about this. You're going to, you need to be able, it's not just, you know, what you can do or what you might be able to do. It's who you are. And what we know is a lot of people go onto Google to find out who you are. Right? Prospective partners, personal and professional, right? And certainly employers. And what I ask kids is, will a Google search make or break you? And do you know what 9 times out of 10 they come back and say? Go ahead, mate, you won't find anything. Because we've done such a good job of telling them, either don't do anything bad online, but if you do something bad online, do it under a pseudonym. Right? Protect your privacy. Now, don't get me wrong. Obviously, that's important. Protect your privacy. That's common sense. But it's played into this narrative where kids are confident that I won't find them online. Right? Go ahead. Do it. Without actually addressing the behaviors that they're doing. Right? So I actually put out to them, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, mate. And the opposite of a negative digital footprint is not to have no digital footprint. The opposite is to have a positive one. But in order to have a positive digital footprint, you've got to do some good stuff, right? So how can we use the different platforms which are out there, whether it's blogging, whether it's Twitter, whether it's forum-based communities? So what I'm going to do is it's kind of like a little bit of a whistle-stop tour through some things. You're going to get a link at the end of this with all the resources that I talk about, so you can have a play with at home and have a look and chat to your kids about it. Or you know what? There's definitely going to be some things here which you're going to go and do, guarantee. So edX. So edX is really, it's kind of formalized Jack's experience of going and searching for stuff. edX provides a platform where lots of the world's top universities put courses online for free, okay? And they can run anything from a 4-week through to a whole semester, and they're free. So, you know, you can see the MIT, Harvard, Berkeley, I think this university has some on QUT. QUT has stuff on as well. Loads of Australian places up there as well. So one might be Introduction to Computer Science, right? And you can enroll. It's self-paced. And this is good because we've got some kids who are operating at a higher level than what school is necessarily catering for. Or they're interested in stuff, they might want to go and study, but they can have a taste. See if you do like what they have to do at uni on this. And you can actually, the edX is a good site because it does have high school tailored things as well. So kind of like, you know, free learning support, if you like, as well. So it's not just high flyers. It's also got some really good stuff in there as well. And a really great array of different courses. One of the schools I'm working with, they've taken one of these on marine biology and put it straight into their course. Straight in. You know, so teachers can use it as resources, or you can just show kids, show different people the things there. How many of you have heard of Wattpad? Put your hand up like this if you've heard of Wattpad. Okay, if I was talking to 900 16-year-olds, every hand would be up, right? Which is interesting, right? We think that kids don't like reading anymore, you know? They don't like reading. We're illiterate, right? We're falling down in the rankings. Kids are rubbish, all that stuff, right? Teachers are rubbish. Wattpad's an interesting platform because it would actually argue pretty strongly that there's lots of people reading, right? Just to give you an idea, so Wattpad is an open source platform where you personally now could write a chapter and put it up online, right? And Wattpad is a community of people looking for stories. So you can write about anything you want. The most common genre that kids are reading at the moment is something called fan fiction. So they might be fans of the movie like Twilight or Harry Potter or whatever, and they just write stuff based on that, right? And what's quite cool about this is it's real, straight away. I just want to share with you one story. I don't know if you've heard of Minecraft, right? So Minecraft, I bet you thought all Minecraft mobs were just annoying pests who deserve to be killed. You thought wrong. Each mob has a story. Each mob has his own feelings. Here are just a few of them. Now, I don't know who wants to read that. But 1.4 million people have. And I'm tipping they're not adults. They're probably those young little boys that we think hate reading. And I'm also going to put it out there that Shadow Lycos is also a child, but I'm tipping that he wasn't christened Shadow Lycos. So he's protecting his privacy, right? But he's actually out there connecting. And what's really interesting, I work with several schools actually where there are students now who are being offered book deals because when a publishing company goes to Wattpad and says, right, who's the most read kids? They don't care how old they are. They don't care, you know, they care that, geez, they've engaged that many people. You've done our job for us. Keep writing. Now, don't judge me. 22.2 million people have read a book called Babysitting One Direction. I know you're Googling it already, right? But what I'm saying is, you can find, if you've got a kid who doesn't like reading, chances are you're asking them to read a book that they're not interested in. Start with something they're interested in. And the best thing that happens, by the way, so when I've done this with primary kids, the best thing is they go, that was rubbish, Dan. I go, okay, write your own. Okay, then. Even, they don't like writing, apparently. They don't like reading. But if it's something they're interested in, I'm not saying this replaces old Billy Shakespeare, but what I am saying is, it's like the gateway, all right? Let's get them loving reading again. How can we use YouTube and SoundCloud? You know, kids podcasting, video blogging, film directing. Everyone can do that. You know, like you... Everyone's got one of these now. That changes everything in what they're capable of. It's just that we tell them not to use it. Again, I'm talking in continuums. There are times to use it, times not to, ways to, ways not to. But how could we do it? You know, if you're a musician, where is your YouTube? I want to hear you, mate. Don't tell me you're a muso. Let me hear it. Freelancer. I reckon that some of you might get interested. Who's heard of freelancer.com? Okay, you now have. So freelancer.com is a platform, it's Australian based, but essentially what it does is it enables you to hire freelancers from anywhere in the world, right? Now you might be thinking, mate, I don't need a freelancer. You might not, but but you could be one. Right? And what I mean by that is you can do, there's all manner of things that people are looking for online, right? So anything from as basic stuff from Excel data entry through to animating a book, through to just writing an article on something. And so, again, with kids, you know, I go to a lot of remote areas where the narrative there is, there's no work here, mate. We don't have any hope, you know, and these are teenage boys, particularly. They're the ones who get despondent quickest, I've found. You know, they just say, nah, nothing here for us. So I do a workshop with them where we sit down and we go on and we look at this. And this one here, for example, write a tagline or a slogan. Anyone can have a crack at that, right? And you know what? If it gets up, there's $88 there for you, right? But you might do anything from, as I say, this one here. They want a picture. So the project is a cartoon of a Texas bull at a desk, meant to represent a businessman at his desk. Just Google, just horses cover art, and then they want the bull. The bull won't be relaxed. They need a typewriter. So they're giving you the brief, and then you can have a crack at that and pitch for it. And if you get that at the moment, you're looking between $250 and $750. If you've got a second language, people want stuff translated. So when I did this workshop, it's really, you know, sometimes you do a workshop and you sort of leave and you go, I don't know if that's had any impact. But a kid tweeted me about 3 days later with his website. And I don't know if you've gone on YouTube but if you do, you'll find lots of kids like to upload video of them playing games, right? Whippy, again, not his real name. Whippy can edit that for you, right? So kids now send him videos. He downloads them, edits them up, puts music on, and then sends them back. And he charges a pretty small fee for that, but he's got a little disclaimer. I have the right to use your video in my portfolio of work. So when he's applying for a uni course or going for a job, rather than saying, I'm really interested in video editing, I'd like to give it a go, he says, mate, I've been editing and making money for about, you know, 6 months, as it is now, 6 months. He's just started. He's in Condobolin, which is a fairly regional area, remote area, and not remote necessarily, but it's a long way from a city, put it that way. And he's figured out that there's not many people in that area who can help with computers. So based on this, so he's got his web business, but he's still in school, by the way, year 11. He's dropped business studies just quietly. He thought it was boring. But he now goes around and sorts out people's computers. How? Because when they say, oh, what you like, he can show them his work and his website rather than saying, oh, I could do it. Do you want to give us a go, right? And of course, I've mentioned before changing the world. So, you know, I don't know if you know this young lady. This young lady is called Chloe Scott. She lives in Camperdown, a rural town in Victoria. And just at the start of this week, I'm sure you've followed the news with the issues with the dairy prices and things like that. Now, imagine when we were kids, if we had an issue with dairy prices or we had an issue with a local problem or whatever it might be, we would write a letter to our local newspaper, which no one would read. Now you can get onto change.org. And she, just as, you know, she's got, I took this screenshot yesterday, 161,000 supporters. Now, I'm tipping, if you were to go onto change.org and find that, she'll have another 10, 20,000. And again, what are you about, Chloe? Oh, well, when I was 16, I did this. And you can read my articles and what my thinking behind it. You know, and it moves things. Or you might be like this, this is a movement, no better way to call it. It's a movement in America started by high school girls who thought, you know what? Things can get a bit bitchy sometimes in high school. What can we do to sort that out? And they started just doing little, in their own school, little clubs and little activities. And then it grew because the school down the road said, oh, what are you doing there? Why don't you come down? And now, I mean, she's now left school. She's now, I think she's now 21. But now she's basically got this whole movement across the country. But it's based around kids connecting with them and running their own things, right? And it's all social media stuff, this idea of being fearlessly girl, right? It's a beautiful and really, you know, organic voice, young people talking about what it's like to be young and helping other young people out. So, as I said, you know, I know what lessons are taught about social media at school and at home. I'm asking you what could be. And as I say, that's just the start, the tip of the iceberg. If you're interested, that link there, danhasler.com/gennext, that's got all the slides on, but it's also got lots of links to how to set up a blog, how to do your podcast, whatever it might be. And if there's something that you don't see there and you want more information, I don't just put that up to fill a slide. I put it up for hopefully to start a conversation with you. And last but not least, there's a book. It's a great book, actually. And what it does, it's just basically a series of stories like the one I told about Jack, to get you thinking about things. And every single cent in profit goes to helping deliver Indigenous literacy programs in remote communities around the country. So I've only got a handful out there, but if you want one, come and see me, and I'll even sign it for you. Thank you so much for having me. Cheers.